Sustainable development is not an option, it is an imperative. Earth Odyssey is an international organization that aims to research, collect, and present solutions to inspire and empower the ones responsible for educating the children who will lead the world in the future. This is a podcast extracted from the webinar with panelists from around the world.
Webinar 9, Holistic Wellness, Responsible Pathways to Health, Happiness, and Sustainability.
So good evening. Welcome to this 12th webinar. Today we come to the subject of human rights and nature rights. And we have been building up to this by looking at people, peace, nature. If you look at the issue of human rights, 1948, we have the Universal Declaration of Human Rights. That declaration was in the aftermath of the Second World War. The world, of course, has changed in these 70 years. And the 21st century human rights are violated by people. People are violating human rights. But at the same time, nature is violating human rights. Climate change and extreme events cause human suffering, displacement, and death. So that is a violation of human rights by nature. If we look at extreme events, is that a crime by nature against humanity? If you look at the pandemic, which we are in the midst of, which may have started in a laboratory or more likely in ecosystems which were damaged and the virus mutated, is that a crime from nature against humanity? So this question of where the crime is coming from is extremely important. And we need to recognize that something like climate change came from 20% of the world's population, with the greatest impact on the 80% of the world population. So the question of fairness and justice all comes into this. So the time has come in this 21st century that we need to take an integrated approach at both human rights and nature rights. And without that, we don't have the time ahead of us, because the tipping points of climate change, extinction of species, are already on the horizon. And it's important that this happens. Now, first, we need to update the human rights of 1948 to the 21st century reality. We need nature rights, earth rights, a new declaration to be universally agreed. It's an universal declaration, both of these declarations. But what is important to realize is declarations without guarantees of these rights are meaningless. In the last 70 years, there have been 5 or 8 persecutions under the Universal Declaration of Human Rights, and only 2 or 3 went to the International Criminal Court. So we really haven't done that. But the 1948 declaration was not legally binding. Today, whatever we do with human rights in the 21st century and nature rights must be legally binding. But you cannot implement a universal declaration in the world. So we need the International Criminal Court, but every nation, every government, and every local authority and the government also needs to develop mechanisms for implementation of these rights with the right level of persecution. We are not going to go and persecute a person who cut a tree in front of their house, but the major crimes have to be. So both ICC has to be involved, as well as the involvement of every government and every local authority in every country. So let us think, who are the actors in this whole business of human rights and nature rights? One is governments, business corporations, civil society, and citizens of the world. Every one of them have a part to play. And if we look at the last one, the citizens of the earth, the human citizens, they are the eyes, the ears, the hearts, the minds on the ground who can report the crimes against humanity, who can report the crimes against nature. And it is important to realize these are really crimes. And if you don't punish the crimes while they are happening, they will only multiply and the end is only doom. Let's look at the indigenous people of the world. There are 500 million indigenous people in the world. Last month, in Taiwan, which is one of the developed countries, the indigenous people have been in the forest for many years. And the Taiwanese government passed a regulation that they must be restricted in their hunting habits. They have lived in harmony with nature forever, like indigenous people everywhere. And one of the things they have to do is to hunt for food. But that was a regulation that's been passed. So the citizens of the world today are unaware of what is human rights. So whatever we do with rights of nature or earth rights, the first and foremost thing must be a campaign to inform the citizens of the world what these rights mean, because they are at the front line. They are not only at the front line to report, they are also at the front line to die from whatever is happening in the violation of human rights and nature rights. So it is important that we have campaigns and education program. How can we rely on our governments and business corporations when we look at the last 50 years of sustainable development summits and conference after conference, and our performance has been dismal? The Sustainable Development Goals is the new map for the next 10 years. And unless we really are serious about implementation, you know, we can go on talking, but we are running out of time because our record has been that. We do not have more than 50, 70 years ahead of us if we want to save nature and we want to save humanity. And that's the challenge for us. And the citizens, the audience listening to us, have an absolute important plan, a part to play, to be committed citizens. Because if nothing else, we owe it to our children and their future to contribute to a better world. I will stop there, and I'm now going to introduce to you the two partners in our webinar today. First is the Rights of Mother Earth, Doris Rigatti. Doris, you have the floor.
Thank you so much for having us here today at this wonderful webinar. My name is Doris Rigatti. I'm the co-founder of the global petition asking the UN to adopt the Declaration of Rights of Mother Earth. What got me started many years ago, one of the things that got me started is that humans have rights, corporations have rights, but nature is treated as a commodity. She doesn't have rights according to the Western laws. She's treated as a resource for the economy, which really leaves, you know, she has no chance. Humans have all the rights, but nature doesn't. So we started this global petition asking the UN to adopt the Declaration of Rights of Mother Earth towards the Earth Summit in Rio plus 20 in 2012. where we have handed over almost 117,000 signatures to the former UN Secretary General. You can find the petition on our website and share it and sign it, please, at rightsofmotherearth.com. Obviously, like Mahendra said, a declaration is not legally binding like the Human Rights Declaration. But the Human Rights Declaration has informed more laws around the world than any other document ever. And the reason why we want a Declaration of Rights of Mother Earth is to really put down a stake of commitment for by the global governing system, such as the United Nations is. If it's like a, you know, a signal to move towards an Earth-centered approach to a new era, a paradigm shift which is needed. Because today, 73 years after the adoption of the Human Rights Declaration, we are at a different point in life. Nature is suffering today. We really need the same commitment for the protection of Mother Earth and the natural environment as we had 73 years ago for the protection of humanity. It's what also strikes me is that over the last 40 years alone, the world has lost over 60% of the biodiversity, which is been at an incredible speed since everything is automated nowadays, and we have computers. The loss of the natural environment, which is used as a resource, has been speeding up tremendously. And this is also why I truly believe in our heart that it's time for a Declaration of Rights of Mother Earth. I'm working with Pela together on two initiatives also. One is the Biodiversity Convention, where they're working on a new framework, the post-2020 framework for the Biodiversity Convention, which is really where the globe, you know, the global governments are nowadays deciding on nature issues. And the draft framework currently includes rights of nature. We've been working on sending a message to the national focal points to make sure it remains there. This could really make a big difference. And we invite you to participate in that. You can find the link on how you can participate on our website for this initiative, which is called Rights of Nature. Earth. I will put it in the chat, and there you can find the petition to sign for a Declaration of Rights of Mother Earth, and also a list of focal points where you can find the focal points of your countries, perhaps, and send them the message to please keep rights of nature in the convention when it will be adopted at the end of this year. Thank you.
What you are with this Mother Earth rights and nature rights, I think it's extremely critical. And I want to just state one example. When we humans breathe out, the trees breathe in. When the trees breathe out, humans have the air to breathe. We cannot live even for more than a few minutes without nature. Just the air, never mind water and food. So that is the linkage between the human and nature. And it's very important that these two are integrated going forward in the 21st century. Pela, now we need the ecocide, the criminal side of crimes against nature. Pela, yes. You have the floor.
Thank you. We need to end ecocide, isn't it? And I'm sitting just outside of Stockholm, where half a century ago was the first international conference on environmental issues, the Stockholm Conference. And since that time, we have adopted thousands of treaties and conventions trying to protect nature, and we fail spectacularly. So Doris mentioned the Convention on Biodiversity, which is actually missing all of its targets. So we have a lot of very, very nice and important words in those documents, but since they are not legally binding, as Mahendra said, they fail to hold us to account. And that's why we need criminal law at this point to give us rules to hold us jointly accountable to protect and respect the living systems that we need and that we are a part of. And ecocide as an international crime is about that. It's about aligning human law with the laws of nature and doing that on an international level in the Rome Statute, which is the document regulating the International Criminal Court. And it's one of the most powerful legal frameworks in the world. It regulates the crimes that are of concern to the whole of humanity, like crimes against humanity and genocide and war crimes. And ecocide could and should be one of those crimes, since the earth is one system. So we have to have rules in common. And also the most powerful actors currently impacting nature in a negative way are the multinational and transnational companies, and they basically don't have any rules. So the economy has become increasingly global since the time of the Stockholm Conference, but there are no corresponding governance systems, so there are no corresponding rules. And the beautiful thing with the ICC is that it's an institution that exists. It's already there. We don't have to create it. We can just use it for what is now the most pressing issues of our time. That, as you have said, I mean, human rights are meaningless, and we can never reach peace if we don't take care of nature. And also, the Rome Statute is connected to all the jurisdictions of the state parties of the International Criminal Court. So once the parties ratify ecocide as a crime, they will also have to implement it nationally, which makes this a systemic response. And I would just like to share with you our initiatives from End Ecocide Sweden, which is really, they're just, we haven't even launched them yet, so this is a sneak peek into what's coming. And one of them is to gather businesses behind ecocide as an international crime. So we are creating Ecocide Law Alliance, which is directed towards businesses, which it's actually about leveling the playing field. So making responsible businesses, which actually are most businesses. I mean, we want to be responsible. We want to take care of nature. But now the competition in the world is geared towards those who can stomach destroying ecosystems. They will gain. They will make profit from that. But we have to make that illegal so that we can shift into a circular economy and a healthy business and rethink development in a regenerative way. So the other initiative that we are working on right now is to gather faith communities, religions, because the moment we are in now is actually an existential moment for humanity, where we have to rethink ourselves and our role and what's meaningful in the world. And faith communities are those who kind of have that role and that competence and who are the ones who help us with that. So we want to gather all religious voices from all over the world behind a very concrete legal measure to protect the creation, to protect Mother Earth. And I really encourage you all to get in contact with End Ecocide Sweden, because we want to have, I mean, if you want to help us in those initiatives, Faith for Ecocide Law and Business for Ecocide Law, we really want to speak with you. Thank you.
Thank you, Bella. The Ecocide Initiative is an extremely important step forward. The two questions are, while the legal profession is drafting the covenants, the mechanisms, the legal aspects, are we going to produce a list of what is a crime and what is not? That is one question. And the other question is, today is International Day of Biodiversity. Mm. This year, at the beginning of this year, a major report came out of Cambridge University, and the title of that report was Economics of Biodiversity. Economics of Biodiversity. And I was talking to some indigenous people here in the forests of Indonesia, and I mentioned to them, and he said, tell all those professors to write a report on the humanity of biodiversity. So this is all linked together. But Bella, do you need a frame of what are crimes against nature?
Yeah, definitely. So let me first address the second question, because I think, so we have in our culture, in the Western culture, we have this view of the world as a commodity, a resource for us, which is a crazy idea, really, since what you said is that we are actually part of Mother Earth. And that's why dealing with biodiversity in an economic transactional sense is not helping us today, I believe. That's why using law is so much more powerful, because that's where we get into the relational aspect of who we are in relation to all of the other living beings. That's about what's right and wrong, what's important and what's less important. And that's where we want to be today, I think. So I can totally relate to that. But then what is ecocide as an international crime? Well, that's the million-dollar question, isn't it? And I believe that will emerge. But a very important point of emergence is actually in 1 month time, because the last 6 months, a committee has been working of a top level legal scholars and lawyers and judges have been working on a definition of ecocide as an international crime. And it will be launched June 21st from Stop Ecocide Foundation. So this is a very pertinent question, and I don't want to answer it more than that. So tune in.
Thank you. Thank you. Samuel, are you there? Samuel Okori.
No, he just was in and out, and now he's out. So you would catch him.
Then I think at this stage, because we are about halfway through our speakers and we are all talking about science and other thing, but remember, the first, what will survive in this world is art, heritage, poetry, not our buildings, not our wealth. So I now want to give the floor to Dipali. Dipali, you have the floor. And Yuri, if you can put the picture up, if it's possible.
Well, hello, everyone. And thank you so much for having me with you all today. I wanted to share something that I wrote some time ago. It's a poem. I wrote this poem in honor of a breathing being, a very simple, a very humble, so necessary to our survival, but one that has no voice, and that is the tree. We've been speaking a lot just now on the interdependence and the interconnectedness between humanity and planet Earth, and the fact that Mother Earth has no voice or rights at law yet. An example of our interconnectedness with nature is the relationship of humans with the trees, which is one of perfect symbiosis. Dr. Mahendra Shah has already said, humans breathe in oxygen and we exhale carbon dioxide. Trees breathe in our carbon dioxide and exhale oxygen. The role trees play in the ecosystem is vital for human and other life on Earth. In addition, trees support us by providing shade and shelter. They prevent soil erosion. They serve as windbreaks. They clean the groundwater and they provide food. Not just that, but each tree, like each human, is unique and beautiful in its own way. By the way, I must say this is not the poem yet. This is my idea for the poem. So I'm just explaining a little piece before I start saying the poem. I will tell you when I start. So every tree and every human is, as we all know, unique and beautiful in their own way. Every tree is it's based on the soil in which it grows, the length of its growing season, the general environment. It will develop colors, and all of that will be different, no matter how small those differences. As well, both humans and trees are mostly made up of water. Another similarity is that, like trees, people stand upright. They have a crown on their head. Their limbs stem from a central trunk. And even our lung system, the tubular pattern of our branching pattern of our lung system, it represents the root system of many trees. Another similarity is that trees and us humans live in communities, and we thrive when we respect and nourish the other. So not only do we share these physical and biological similarities with trees, but there's also an ancient spiritual connection between us and trees, and that transcends borders, language, culture. So in a way, it even transcends the fact that, as we've been talking about today, Mother Earth has no voice, or a tree has no voice. The tree of life, or trees, have been used as a symbol in almost all religious texts. That includes in the Bible, the tree of life or the tree of knowledge, the tree of immortality in the Quran, the Assyrian tree of life in Mesopotamia, and the Bodhi tree in Buddhism. Even in ancient Greece and Persia and other regions, commonly the tree is used as a symbol. With its roots wrapped around the earth, it connects the heavens with the earth, with the underworld. So I'm out walking in the beautiful forests of the south of France, and I start my walk on a particular day where I was feeling somewhat unhinged, somewhat unsure, lonely, a little bit anxious, no reason, just, you know, we have these feelings. And on this particular walk, I felt deeply connected to the trees surrounding me, almost as if they were communicating with me, showering me with love and energizing my core. That's not voodoo or magic. That's the reality, and it is the power of a tree. The poem that I will read now came to me after this walk that day in the forest. Tree of power. Mesmerized, I come to watch you through the seasons, like a daughter watching her mother in admiration. You turn all shades of color, discriminating against none. Enabler of light and energy, taking a little and allowing the rest to pass through and all around you. In the wind, you move like a ballet dancer, gently and with abundant grace, bending to the external forces, moving with the elements, never fighting them so hard that you snap. Others find shelter in you, and you give it freely, asking nothing in return. Your shade offers all who seek it cool respite. Your green jewels, once polished and bright, wither and fall, lost momentarily to the ravenous earth at your feet, but not lost forever. You have found a way for the past to propel you into the future, the master of regeneration. Your body grows lopsided, asymmetrical, weathered skin scarred and wrinkled with the passage of time. All of these external imperfections, yet your lofty presence sustains many, and your steady brilliance adorns our gilded cage. Vanity has no place in your strong bowels. You have no attachment to the self, nor all of its layers. Grounded and rooted, you stand tall, powerful, and proud through the ages. At times, I long to be you. Oftentimes, I lie silently in your arms. A few times, I have longed to be buried under you. And sometimes I long to soar high above you. But never, never do I wish to be without you. Today, alone, and facing you in the dawn of spring, after a long, cold, and hard winter, I long to possess all that you are, to impregnate the essence of you into the essence of me. Thank you.
Thank you, Dipali. You know, the heritage of humanity is art, poetry, literature, music. We are scientists, policymakers talking. Musicians are now, Bob Marley is an example of stand up for your rights. Bob Dylan is another example. We need much more to use the medium of poetry to reach out for whether it's mother rights or human rights or all this. So thank you. I think it's an eye opener, and I really, on behalf of Earth Odyssey and Mother Earth Rights and Ecocide, this is a rare occasion to have you, and thank you so much. Samuel, are you there now? Okay, Aramaini, you have the floor, please. Bring in the arts now.
All right, thank you. I've been working on, of course, creating artwork, but my art definition is not just limited to object. I extended the meaning of art that is then connected to life itself. So the basic principle of art production is actually about exploring creativity, right? So then I don't limit myself to a conventional kind of format of the so-called art, but expand it as I try also to expand, to explore the creativity itself. And also, it's not just limited to my own, personally, my own creativity, I mean. But also, I've been working a lot with the community. So trying to also to explore communal creativity, which is, I think, needed in this kind of, you know, situation. We human being, if we respect the rights of Mother Earth and nature, I think we also have to collaborate, to work together between human and also other beings. That's the basic principle, okay? So maybe I want to show you an example of an ongoing community-based art project that I've been doing for almost 20 years now, and working with various kind of groups of people. Maybe I can share some images. So they just click the share, right?
Yeah, share screen, yes.
Yep, okay. Share screen. Okay, how can I, sorry, I'm not used to, okay. Ah, okay, you can see, right?
Not yet, but yeah, it's coming. Yeah,
yeah? Can you see?
Yeah, it's here.
All right, okay. So this is one of this work on community-based kind of art project, and it's called Flag Project. And as you can see, there are flags with keywords coming from communities that I have been working with. And this is, we perform this in the Borobudur Temple, which is the largest Buddhist temple in the world, and it is located near my place in Central Java. All right. Yep. And this one, the community I work with in Yogyakarta, so we perform this on public area. You know, the beach is important area for environmental protection in Indonesia, because it's an archipelago, right? So ocean is very important part of nature and needs to be protected. You know what is happening today? I mean, there's a lot of plastic garbage going to the sea. And yeah, as you know, it is very dangerous, not only for the creatures on the sea, but also for us, human beings. So basically, just destroying, right? Okay, that's from Jogja, and this is from Singapore. So I've been working also with the communities in Singapore, and actually we just had the latest kind of project, but of course it's still online with the group of people from Nanyang Technology University, but we are working with communities in Singapore, and they really would like to work together with the community I work with in Indonesia. So you see, the networking is now is becoming, I guess, an important issue for everybody who is concerned about the environmental problems. They want to be connected one to another. So, luckily I have been living like a nomad for ages. So I have networks and contacts in various countries in this world. Okay, Singapore, and this is in Sydney in Australia. And actually recently there's this article published on Melbourne University journal. I can send you the link later. And they want to also work with the communities, and they want to learn about how to create this community kind of connection and work, because this is what I heard so far, that lifestyle is very individualistic in Australia, but of course a lot of people now realize that they can't go on living that way, and the natural resources destructions also in Australia is becoming a very serious problem. Yeah, so this is, you see, Singapore, Australia, of course, is very close neighbors to Indonesia. So this is actually maybe a good sign that will give sense of hope for us, our young generation, you know, because they need to have also a kind of optimism for the future. And then, of course, this is in China. Of course, I've been working, I told you, I've been working in Tibet Plateau for last 10 years. And then in the last 5 years, the Chinese also side is very open to my ideas and the way I have been working with communities. And actually, in recent, just started last year, they would like to implement the practice of empowering the communities. I guess maybe because they realize after there's this situation, you know, pandemic situation, that they cannot, you know, control or centralize everything and control everything by the government. So now they started to do this kind of project where the communities are doing things and exploring the possibilities of creativity to deal with all kind of problems that they have to deal with. But most special problem is about environment. Yeah, this is in China. So yeah, I've been working with the community of artists, of course, but also activists of environment and also social activists too. And then also in Japan, this is also, I have been working with the community in Japan for quite a long time, and they are also, you know, already doing something in, with the community in Indonesia, especially the community who are under, you know, difficulties. Either, for example, hit by earthquake or a flood, or, you know, like today's situation, there are lots of people lost jobs and stuff like that. Okay, Japan, and then this is in Germany. This is also an ongoing kind of project. As I told you, I've been teaching in Passau University for last 10 years. And we are working also outside the university system, I mean with my students, and also organization of like NGOs, and trying to deal with the problems in Indonesia in relation to Germany. Yep. Okay, so that's maybe something that I share with you, and will tell you about one way or one possibility in dealing with the this problem, environmental problem that we have to deal with. This is one way of protecting the Mother Earth and the nature by coming together and work together.
Thank you. Thank you, Aramaini. We need many more scouts and girl guides on the ground to be doing what you are doing, because that frontline soldiers are very important. Samuel, are you there? Samuel? Samuel is with the pop movement. He's in Nigeria, and often it's a struggle to connect. So if we see him coming online, we will give him the floor. Yuri, can you show us a short film, short video? Because Aramaini had arranged with this delegation from the Papua Forest, was Mr. Effendi Buling and Basuki Budik Satoso, who are on the ground. And we show you a short film. It's we will share the link, YouTube link with you, but please watch.
Yeah, I didn't put audio here, but it's a long film. It's about 1 hour. So we can share the link and people can watch it later. with amazing images from Indonesia.
On the boat are seedlings for a seedling.
I can't hear.
No, Samuel, please stay on the line.
Okay, because my network is actually bad, so I don't know how long it's going to go on. So,
can we take a break, Yuri, and put Samuel? Samuel, you have the floor.
Okay, so good day, everybody. So sorry I'm coming in between, just that I just need to look for a place that's has a good network connection, and then my video is also off. Okay, so I'm outside trying to get a good perfect connection. Yeah, so talking about Ecocide is something that just like the last meeting we had about right of nature is something that everybody has to take absolute concern for. You know, yesterday while in shower, I was just thinking about something and a thought just resonates in my heart. And that thought is, what if tomorrow the earth chases all of us away and we don't have anywhere to call home anymore? What are we going to do? Who are we going to ask that question? Why? So that thought resonates in my head. And today we carried out a climate strike here in Nigeria, and we are not just talking about keeping your environment clean, but we are talking about conserving our wild species, especially the endangered species. Because if we don't conserve, they are going into extinction. And one thing about human race is that we keep on saying nature will heal itself. What if nature don't get to heal itself, but chases us all the way, and we don't get to even heal ourselves at the later end? So who loses out is we humans. You know, I try connecting a whole lot of stories about the Bible and a whole lot of stories about Noah and the ark. And each time I ask myself this question, why is it that God preserved all the wild species? In fact, he preserved all the living species, but left only five human beings in that ark. Why did he take all the humans? Why didn't he take about 20 or 10? But he took all the species that were more than thousands, like in that ark. So why did he take few humans and all the wild species? Because he knew that man will end up destroying a whole lot of things. And man was even destroying the earth. I think that was even why the flood was even caused, apart from the whole lot of things. But I know man was doing a whole lot of logging, a whole lot of injustice to species and to the earth as well. So it's something that we have to ask ourselves. If we are getting a whole lot of things wrong, we have to go back to the drawing board. If nature is angry with us, why is nature angry at us? That means we have not been taking good care of what nature has given us. So it's time for us to speak for these animals. You know, they cannot actually talk. You know, they cannot actually tell you are hurting me, please let me go. And you know, they cannot actually say, okay, let me sign a law that you stop hurting us. It's left for us to act for these things. And if we don't act for them now, just like the gorilla movie we watched, whereby there was a great revolt. So if we don't act for them now, one day they may just wake up and be like, well, I don't think we can take this anymore. Let's just go out on the street and start causing havoc. And that may be the end of the human race, which basically is not our portion anyway. But for that not to be our portion, we have to act. And I believe action speaks louder than just words alone. It's not just all about saying the word, but it's all about going out there. If you see someone that is causing an injustice to any living species or to the environment, you tell the person, stop. What if this environment opens up and swallows you up? What are you going to do? You bring back that consciousness of what if, so that they know that, okay, I'm not just the one that this thing is going to happen to. And something again is that this planet, we are going to live and die, but the planet will remain. And as long as the planet remains, it means that the planet one day may just take all of us out of it and bring back what she actually wants. You see? So there is a way of nature fighting for herself, but for us to not to get the dangers of nature itself, we can actually fight on behalf of nature to bring about justice for all living species, justice for our environment, justice for even the forest. Right now, Nigeria have lost over 60% of her forest. Over 60%. There's a whole lot of logging going on. We have people are even threatened. Lives are being lost. People that went on to say stop the logging, they are being threatened. I know people that have been arrested because they are fighting against logging. So there is a whole lot of things happening. And if we keep shutting down our forest, causing a whole lot of harm to our environment, then we know that we are just a step away to our doom. Yes, we are just a step away to the doom that will come. And when it comes, I don't know if anybody has played the game called Doom. Because when the time of doom comes, it's really disastrous. Like, it's outrageous that you cannot even contain it. So for me, I believe is a collective responsibility. But before you make it collective, we have to individualize it first to say it is my responsibility. Once we say it is my responsibility and doing the practical aspect, then we can start the evangelism to tell others it is also your responsibility. From there, it becomes a collective responsibility that everybody has to be involved. It's not just all about saying it, like I said earlier. It's all about action. So if I'm saying no to ecocide, that means if I see anybody anywhere that is doing harm to species, I will tell them you are doing the wrong thing. I will fight for them and I will say stop this. And actually, I've been doing that. I've been promoting a whole lot of white species. I've been protecting even, you know, last month I was in Calabar and we went to a panjuries rank where we saw a whole lot of panjuries. We saw chimpanzees and all that. And it was even awesome, like seeing them being safe. And what they are doing there is rescue. So once they go out there, if there is anyone that is endangered, they rescue them, bring them back to the park and keep them there. Bring them back to the ranch and keep them there. And we even have to donate to them too because they are doing amazing work. So if we see people that are into rescue mission, promote them, encourage them. And also if you see white species out there that are endangered, you can take them to those rescue places where they are more safe and they are more protected. So thank you very much for having me. It's an honor. Though today we had a climate strike, so my activities has really been choked up. We mobilized over 60 people and just within our own target, but the audience target we had was over 1,000. So it was really massive today. And we know we are still going to do more. It's for our planet. It's for our environment. And apart from that, it's for our own good. It's for the good of our generation, the good of our today, and the good of our future. So thank you very much.
Thank you. Thank you, Samuel. You are really an ambassador on the floor. You said nature will live. Humans cannot survive without nature. Nature will always survive long after humans are gone because it lives in harmony. The second thing you said, that animals cannot speak to us. I think the problem is not animals cannot speak. The problem is we don't know how to communicate with animals. How many millions, hundreds of millions of people in the world have a pet and they find total solace in communicating with that pet? So it's just that we humans still don't have the capacity. You may have the robots and you may have the AI, but we don't have the capacity and the ingenuity to be able to communicate to animals, because animals do communicate. But what you are doing in Nigeria under the POP label is amazing, and it's always a great pleasure to have you with us. So thank you so much, Samuel. I now call on 2020. I don't know why we have to give the floor to these old-timers, but Heiner, you have the floor. Heiner?
Yes, I am now unmuted. I'm Heiner in Berlin. I was asked 2 hours ago, so I did not really prepare, but what you were saying of involving the arts, the cultures, UNESCO says cultural expressions, is very, very dear to me. And the issues are that how we can give guarantees, how can we come to binding agreements when we have reports and thousands of conventions, I just heard, millions of international days and dozens of summits, but how can we bring it together? So I want to show you here with my slides what I have prepared in a second. Yes, so you see, for me it is a problem that we put it in numbers or in words, and we make a differentiation between life and nature, or putting the issues separated. But my concern is that it cannot be measured. Many things, as Einstein said, which counts cannot be counted. So we have to really, and that is my work, look into how to find agreements on what are we talking here about. Yes, you see, my concern was that the citizens are now asked to do the measuring, to really, next slide, I'm taking slides from Julian Campbell. And they are in the UN office with the Convention on Biodiversity trying to bring this together. And show the next slide. She was showing, next slide, that there are incredible environmental data gaps. No, the one above. Yeah. And you see that we have not really something binding which we can compare. So we looked into how to fill the gaps with the citizen sciences. I was in the advisory board of the European Citizen Science Association, and we saw that especially in the goals 6, water and energy, 7, and about land and underwater, there are incredible things where we need the expertise, this stakeholder knowledge of the people, the indigenous people in place. And this is for me very important, because otherwise we have fights at courts over things which are vague, and we don't have something like real numbers, because you cannot really compare other cultures with other data. So we say big data, big noise, that kilometer cannot be compared to kilowatt or kilojoule or kilocalories. And this work to include arts and other issues are not on the slides. I was about to prepare them. Sorry, I just wanted to give knowledge and acknowledgement to Gillian. They are doing a lot of work to really include the indigenous knowledge and the knowledge from all cultures, from the people in the place. Excuse me, this is it the moment. Everything else I show you later.
Thank you. Thank you, You have been working for almost 50 years on these subjects, and it's a pity the slides didn't quite work, but I really appreciate also the two-hour advance notice to join us today. I appreciate you to be with us. I now want to give the floor to Yukepeme. Always the peace is the overarching element. So Yukepeme, you have the floor.
Thank you. Greetings. My name is Ukpeme Okon, and I am an ambassador for peace. I emphasize that a harmonious coexistence between humans and the Earth system is essential because due to the variety of life in the world. And then also because of our connectedness, unhealthy, unsafe, divisive lifestyles, they affect us negatively. You know, they negatively impact the society and the environment. But there are ways, just as we talk about actions. So I'll just summarize what I need to say, because I am an action-based person. Yes, we need to, when we speak, we are sharing knowledge, we are sharing the issues that plague us and the problems that plague us. But we can take action. And that action needs to start from us, individually and collectively. And so when we are talking about these issues of rights, what can we do? So we are encouraged to campaign for laws. We are encouraged to make laws. We are encouraged to review laws. And we are encouraged to implement laws that respect and protect human, animal, and environmental rights. Thank you.
Thank you, Yukepeme. You are the first one in our webinar today to use the word action. Nobody else mentioned the word action. And it's a lack of action that is the cause of everything that happens. And that is the most important element that going forward, whether we have nature rights or human rights, that action without actions, it is only talk as we have talked for 70 years. So to move it forward. Now, Yuri, before I give you the floor, shall we open it for discussion? Because you are the maestro. And you have a great thing at the end about the Amazon. So if you agree, we will have an open discussion now for the next 15 minutes. Yuri, do you agree? The co-founder of the authority.
Yes, that's
so great. The floor is open for an open discussion. And I just say six words that the important thing is the citizens out there listening, and all of you are committed that we need actions, action to make human rights a reality, actions to make nature rights a reality, actions to persecute the crimes against humanity, and actions to persecute the crimes against nature. The floor is yours, please. There are many people listening out there. This is your opportunity, please. Dipali, do you have something to say?
I think it's just really a case of the thing that we have concluding with, which Yukepeme said, is action. And really, I was just thinking for myself here, but you don't have to devote your whole life to implementing action. But what every single individual must do is invest time in their day, in their week, in their month to doing something for the betterment of nature. So it's really important for everyone to understand that this is not something, this call to action from Earth Odyssey is not something that is unachievable because you're busy and you have many things to do. It could be as simple as cleaning a beach or learning something about nature or finding a way to grow stuff in your garden or to understand how things are grown in your area to support those that are growing using old and you know, biodiverse techniques of growing. It's very simple things. It could be teaching your children something about nature, about the environment. And so whilst, you know, we're all of you here on this webinar today have literally devoted your lives to implementing action and to the cause of protecting Mother Earth. In fact, everyone listening to you who may see a kind of even a displacement, just much like a citizen sees a displacement with the government, although it's of course not on that level. But I just want to say that we can all do something, even if it's a small thing, but we must do something every single day. Thank you.
Thank you. Doris, I saw your hand, Doris.
Yeah, thank you, Mahendra. I would just like to also thank UKPEME for the call for action, because the rights of nature is not so complicated, really. I mean, it's going to have to be figured out how to implement it. But what it's really asking for is a reform of the legal systems to include nature and acknowledge nature rights, like humans have rights. It's just outdated. So it's basically a reform that we are after in the rights of nature movement. And the petition for a declaration of rights of Mother Earth is also a simple action people can take to be the voice for Mother Earth and ask for an action and a commitment at the global level. And then that informs the national laws and education system and will then lead to a reform of the legal system, hopefully. And Dipali, I agree with daily activities like practicing zero trash or picking trash up and, you know, reducing our consumption and caring rather than using for nature. Caring for nature rather than using nature. I think that could also make a huge shift towards living in harmony with nature, besides aligning our laws with the laws of nature. Thank you.
Talking about laws, Bella, ecocide.
Yeah. So I think I am also a person who understands the world through actions and what actions I take and what they then create. And I think it's about what kind of actions that we collectively do. So we are very active. We are very active species, like ants, you know, working all the time very actively. And most of the work that we collectively do now is taking from the earth. And I think that we are in a huge shift now together, that we continue with that kind of action and then we will die. Or we shift and understand that we have to direct our action towards also giving back, because we are in a relationship, so we have to, you know, we take some or we get things, we get gifts from the other beings, but we have to also think about what we give back. And as Dr. Mahendra said earlier, that's mostly, I mean, we can give back in so many ways, but the many ways we give back is through our music and our poetry. And so what I think I am doing with law is to provide frameworks for us to shift where, in what direction our actions are taken, kind of. Mm-hmm.
Thank you, Bella. I want to give you one example of the power of nature. You know, I have a background in science, and we need credible evidence for everything to publish a formal paper. But I want to share with you that I have a team of 65 people who work with me, And these 65 people have something like 260 family members. So altogether, that comes to around 320 family members. In the last year of the COVID pandemic, and the pandemic is everywhere. We have it in Indonesia as bad as anywhere else in the world. We had not one case of a COVID infection among 300 people in this community, because they are surrounded by forests and they work in the forest. So there is something to be said, and nobody is talking about that nature, apart from air and water and food, is equally important for our immunity. And everyone listening out there, you need to spend 15 minutes every day putting your hand on a tree somewhere in a forested area, and you'll be amazed what happens. So that we have to look at the intrinsic value of this, of nature. Anyone else? Please, Heiner.
Yes, I only wanted to show you that we can go to shared imagination, that we can really show how through cultural expressions the issues are brought together. Einstein told us this old thinking can only give rise to the old problems, but we need new thinking and new problems. And there we play with young people on really reflecting, if I'm doing it, which is object, or when I'm counting, then it is objective, or is it subjective or intersubjective? So let's try to go beyond words and numbers and come to compassion and jointly feeling and acting. Over.
Thank you. You new thinking, as you quoted Einstein, is why we need to think again of the Human Rights Declaration from 1948. It is not cast in commandments, and we need to rethink and use our brains on that. And remember, we can work on nature rights, we can work on earth rights, we can work on ecocide. But if you don't get our human rights in order, none of that will matter, because it's human activities that has been the destructive and will continue to be the destructive. So that is a critical point, that human beings, their rights and how they behave is equally important. Aravaini, you are raising your hand.
Okay. All right. Yes, I completely agree with Utene about the importance of action. I mean, that's what really needed. And this is also what I have been doing on my practice, although people call it art, but actually we are also doing practical things like doing organic farming, managing the garbage and recycle, managing the energy, the water, or with solar panels, and also how the community becoming independent, like in Indonesia, for example. Actually, we have a very serious problem of there is no food sovereignty kind of, you know, system. And this is what I've been trying to do with the communities, especially with the young people and the community of Islamic boarding school, for example, you know, because we need a group of people to support this kind of idea, and also to prove it that we can do it, because unfortunately the government until today, they don't really care, you know. They even just release a new kind of agreements or rules on how to, you know, invite investors. And this is really bad, because investors who can invest their money in this country, they can destroy the environment, you know. They even kick out the indigenous group from their own land. This is terrible. But yeah, of course, we have to do something and we have to fight for the rights of nature and also of the local indigenous group. Because here is, they don't respect, you know, their rights. Yeah, which is really sad, but okay. We have no choice. We just have to do the action, right?
Yeah, thank you. Thank you. I think the message that's coming out is very simple, that we love children, whether they are our children or somebody else's children. The children are our future. And all of us who are adults or more than 35 years old today, we will have a good life the next 35, 40 years. But we will sacrifice the life of future generations. And that surely our grandchildren we can see, and we owe it to them that we need to put our world and our planet into order. And that's probably the lesson that the citizens of the world need to mobilize their humanity and create a sustainable, humane world. That's the challenge and that's the message. Yuri, I'm going to give you the floor. Now, Yuri is not just the maestro, the electronic maestro of these webinars. He is an explorer who crossed and proved that the Phoenicians were well before Columbus by building a ship, and he sailed that ship. I give him the floor because he's in the depths of Brazil. Yuri, you have the floor.
Thank you, Dr. Mahendra. Yes. Yeah, just thanks for that mention. Yeah, we crossed the Atlantic Ocean last year, or 2018-20, on a Phoenician ship. And I was pleased to hear about Borobudur today, because the Captain Philip Beale, who was with my partner in this project, Phoenician, he built a ship in Borobudur as well many years ago, and sailed from Indonesia all the way to Africa. And now if you go to Borobudur, the museum, his ship is there. So it's nice to hear. And I'm going to tell him about that today, that you are in Borobudur. So it's amazing for me. Okay, well, this is just going to show some pictures from the Amazon. Since it's the International Day of Biodiversity, I thought I could show some pictures. And this is not a leaf. I mean, it's nature at its best. You can see it's a bug. It has legs. But if you look in the forest, if you're not paying attention, you think it's just a leaf, just a piece of vegetation. It's not. It's a bug, an insect. It's from the Amazon. Same here. If you go to a forest and you look at this flower, looks like a flower, has different colors actually. It's not a flower, it's a spider. And over the time, due to intelligence, due to nature, evolution, it became, this spider became more and more looking like a flower. So it's easier to capture the preys, or to hide from other predators. So I'm just going to show a few of those pictures, and I think it's amazing. It's just to show how wonderful our plant is. I mean, how wonderful our biodiversity is. Here's another bug. If you look in the forest, it's not careful, you don't see a bug. You just see some leaves. It's actually, as you can see, it's a bug. Here's again. Well, yeah. So I'm going to just share some pictures. Just to say, it's amazing to be here. And it's amazing to be part of this organization. And thank you everybody for being here with us. And just to send, this is a few images we can share from the Amazon. We have the greatest biodiversity in the planet. And when Charles Darwin was writing his book about evolution, Origin of the Species, he couldn't find the proof to prove his theory, how the species evolved in the planet. And it was because of a young explorer, Henry Bates, English, he got the proof from the Amazon. It was a butterfly that, over time changed to another species, adapting to have adventures in the forest to, either survive, hide from predators, or to hunt. So that's a few images. So
one thing, Yuri, the latest research in this area, I'm talking to some people in Croatia who have developed a new aspect to this. You connect a prod into the ground to the root of a plant. You connect another prod on the stem, another prod on the leaf, another prod on the fruit, and you measure the vibrations in this, and it is more musical than any meditation music you have heard. So the roots are communicating with the leaf and communicating with the fruit. So this research is beginning to show us that there is live communication across this. And when you show us these pictures from Amazon, they are all communicating. And that's a harmony in nature.
Very good. Yes, that's what I'm talking about. It's in balance. Of course, when you disturb this balance, as we do, as the human race is doing, then you have the, let's say, the human rights being violated by nature, as you posed, because we are invading their territory. We are not respecting. And then when they fight back, I mean, the nature fights back, and just they'll defend themselves and give us a pandemic like this. Can we really blame them? I don't think so. I mean, it should be a different system. We should have, I hope in the future, mankind will evolve to learn that we really need this system in balance, in equilibrium. Otherwise, anything we do will reflect against us. And that could be very bad. I mean, this pandemic is not the first one, won't be the last one. If you don't learn the lessons now, because now we have technology, we have science, we have even better spirit to understand what's happening, and prepare for the next one, for the other ones. And if you don't do that now, that can be really, really bad for mankind and for the planet. I mean, the planet will survive. The planet, of course, will adapt. Us, I'm not sure about that. Thank you.
And that's true of the next climate catastrophe that will come. And that's not far away.
Yeah.
So any more final words from the panel? We have 5 more minutes.
Yeah, just to complement my thing, we are doing an expedition next year. We're going to be exploring the Amazon. And of course, I hope we can all can connect. We're planning to do a seminar at the end of the expedition. Our intent is to travel the whole Amazon River. And then at the end, we have a seminar. So we're going to talk to you guys later and invite you to be part of this through Earth Odyssey. That's the plan. So we can share more images of the Amazon.
Yuri, you need to be more clear than that, because Pella is listening, Doris is listening, Yukepeme is listening.
Your opportunity, please.
He tells you you can join.
You have something to say.
You have.
I think it's just really a case of the thing that we're kind of concluding with, which I'm missing.
What's happening, Yuri? Yuri is inviting you to paddle a boat from one side of South America to the other side. There'll be many mosquitoes, but all you need is good legs. And it's an adventure you cannot repeat. So please make a note in your diary. Thank you so much. I think this 12th seminar, which goes to the heart of the problem of nature and human rights, has been a wonderful dialogue. So thank you, everyone. And thank you for the audience out there for joining us. Thank you. Thank you.
Thank you so much.
Join us at earthodyssey.org and sign our YouTube channel at youtube.com-earthodyssey.